For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
All righty, mere hours after the Illegal Curve postgame show has ended, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Along with Ezra Ginsberg, Dave M. going to join us momentarily. I am your host, Drew Mandel. I say good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ezzy, a pleasure. It's been a whopping 7 hours, 8 hours since we last got together.
There's Dave M.
Thumbs up.
Good morning, Dave M.
Everybody's
A-okay. That's a guy that only got 5 hours of sleep right there, if I've ever seen one.
That's right. He's looking a little bit ragged, a little bit haggard, but that's okay.
Dave
Throw
M.
Some driving
cold water
hard
on your eyes,
bastard.
Dave. Come on.
Hmm?
As Kenny Weeb would say, wake up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm awake. It's just frustrating when the technology is not working, unfortunately.
The technology does not work well for Dave M. on this Saturday
morning.
I've been
telling you to upgrade your 56K modem there in the detention center, but
you know, maybe time to stop using Netscape as a browser, something along those lines as well. But that's okay. Everybody's here. Everybody's good. Everybody's happy. The Jets win last night. The Jets play again later tonight. We got the IC Hockey Show right now. We got lots going on. So, of course, let's get right into it. The trade deadline ended yesterday, and it was a significant one for the Winnipeg Jets, keeping up in the arms race that is the Western Conference, the arms race that is the Central Division. I guess we touched on it briefly on last night's post-game show, but because it was like, I don't know, quarter to one, we said saved most of it for this morning. Toffoli is a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Colin Miller is a member of the Winnipeg Jets. And going the other way, we're absolutely zero Jets prospects, draft picks for each of those trades. Ezzy, I'll start with you. If you had to give a grade to the performance that Kevin Cheveldayoff pulled off, the trades that he pulled off, what grade are you giving Kevin Cheveldayoff for the trade deadline moves? You can include the Monahan deal in there as well if you want to look at it from the larger perspective as opposed to just the yesterday perspective.
Chevy gets an A, and if you're not giving Chevy an A, then you just don't know what you're talking about. And I'm glad that you included the Sean Monahan trade, guys, because I think when you look at what teams are doing prior to the deadline, you can't just look at what they did on Friday,
right?
Especially when you're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights or the Colorado Avalanche. Obviously, you know, Hurdle was the big one for the Golden Knights yesterday. Bob McKenzie, we got to give Bob McKenzie a shout out here. Okay, guys, like, he's obviously the Bob father. He's the GOAT, but the fact that he dropped that trade towards the end, like, what was that, like 5 minutes before the trade deadline, and then just dropped the mic and then went back to, you know, his mansion to drink Bobby margaritas. Like, that was just incredible. You know, I just got to give a shout out to the Bob father. That was incredible. But yeah, I mean, you have to factor in the Sean Monahan trade. Obviously, the big acquisition yesterday for the Jets was Tyler Toffoli, and we know his Stanley Cup pedigree. We know that Toffoli's a goal scorer. I think he's actually an underrated playmaker. If you look at his stats from Calgary last year, he actually had more assists than goals, but he's definitely known more so for being a goal scorer. But if you look at his stats and kind of Mike Kelly, give him a shout out. We've had him on the show before, not for a while, but he gets his stats from, I believe it's called Sports Logic. And Toffoli scores all of his goals in the slot. Like, that's where he's made, you know, his career, scoring goals. You know, kind of similar to Sean Monahan.
I was gonna say same thing.
Exactly. So Monahan and Toffoli, Dave M mentioned this on Twitter. They played together for the Ottawa 67s, plural. They played together a little bit with the Calgary Flames. Not that much. I think it was because he was traded to the Montreal Canadiens. But so Toffoli and Monahan have some history there. And then obviously Toffoli's played with some of the LA Kings, right? Alex Iafallo, Gabe Vilardi. I'm not sure if Kupari was one of those guys because he probably wasn't in the NHL yet, but I love the acquisition. Like, I give Toffoli an A+ because he was one of the most talented forwards available on the trade market, and now the Jets have him, and the Jets are already arguably a top five team in the league, and now they add in a fantastic goal scorer, and now what that does is that pushes a guy like Alex Iafallo down to the fourth line. Maybe it pushes Alex Iafallo out of the lineup, Dave. Maybe Cole Perfetti is on the fourth line. I'm sure we're going to get into that. It's really hard to say right now what that fourth line is going to look like, guys, because if you think about it, Vlad Namestnikov and Cole Perfetti had a lot of success on the Jets' second line. Mm-hmm. So I could see Baron Namestnikov Perfetti being your fourth line. Then where does that leave Alex Iafallo? Does Mason Appleton stay on the third line? Does Iafallo go to the third line? Appleton goes to the fourth line. These are all good problems to have. I was thinking about this, and I'm confident in saying this. Before we went to air, I was thinking, should I say this? I don't think that the Jets necessarily have the best forwards in the league, but I think they have the deepest group of forwards. If you look at Colorado or Dallas or Vegas, Boston, Rangers, the top teams in the league, I think the Jets' 1 to 12 forward depth is just as deep as any team. Like, if you look at Colorado, they've got Nate McKinnon. They've got Mikko Rantanen. They've got Valeri Nichushkin. Now they have Casey Mittelstadt. The Jets don't have the star power, Dave, that it's Avalanche have. But 1 through 12, if you've got guys like Baron, Namestnikov, Perfetti, or Iafallo on your fourth line, then that's as deep as any team in the league as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and when you're talking about depth, you look at the – I would say that this is the deepest Jets team we've ever seen. Forward. I mean, obviously not as good as the 17-18 team defensively. But yeah, I don't think there's any question, Ezzy, that this team is, they've got that depth. When you can have, like, think about it. Vlad Namestnikov at one point was your second line center. And we were all like, well, okay, he can be there, but is that really ideal? No, it's not. But in a pinch, you know, having him go up there, we know that he's kind of like, again, like Nino Niederreiter says, that Swiss Army knife that can be put in multiple situations. But ultimately, when you have him, when you have Perfetti, when you have Baron as your fourth line, yeah, that means that you've got some depth, right? And like you said, Ezzy, whether it's Alex Iafallo, I mean, Mason Appleton has been playing better of late, and that line is going again, that third line. So, you know, I mean, it's funny. We always get into these things about lines and what line is what, but ultimately it doesn't really make a difference. But when you look at these trades, I don't think there's any question that Kevin Cheveldayoff, first of all, the fact that he pulled off the Foley trade while getting the Devils to retain, so if he wanted to do something bigger, he gave himself that latitude, was significant. The fact that he gave up, as Drew Ted said yesterday, not the good second rounder.
Yeah, they still have that, which is remarkable. Still have
they still have the Montreal second rounder, which is going to end up, as opposed to a Winnipeg second rounder, that's a difference of probably about 20 spots. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a rather significant retention for the Winnipeg Jets. And like I said, you know, I remember having this conversation with Blake Wheeler years ago, not me specifically, but just as being part of a conversation that Blake Wheeler was asked about draft picks or something like that. And he's like, you know,
Dave actually had sock puppets, and he had like Blake Wheeler sock puppet, and he was asking there. Wheeler questions.
You're right. Players don't care about draft picks. Them picks is what players think about draft picks.
Exactly. And so that was the mentality. It was like, we're here to win now. I mean, obviously we care about the franchise and want the franchise to have longevity and success, but their focus is on winning, and the focus is on winning the Stanley Cup. You know, your window, and that's one thing Wheeler often talked about, how that window decreases as time goes on. And I don't think the Jets' window is getting smaller. I think that they've got a good crop of young guys coming through, and they've got...
Again, there is a window, though. I mean, there is a window.
And what I'm saying is, but right now, that window is Mark Scheifele in his prime, Connor Hellebuck in his prime. Mm-hmm. And so you have... And to me, this is the signal.
Also, Nick Ehlers and Kyle Connor making $6 million a year.
Absolutely.
Sorry, Connor's making $7 million a year, but Connor only has 1 year left on his deal, right?
Right. And so, but what I'm getting at is that these guys... You know, we heard the comments from Brendan Dillon on the road trip, and Paul Friesen was highlighting them. I think he transcribed them, but like these guys like getting Sean Monahan and Ezzy, you're right. The fact that it happened 5 weeks ago makes it feel like it didn't take place. It's not a trade deadline acquisition, but it was a massive sort of get to get that second line center that this team needed, that we were talking about till they acquired him. We were talking that this team doesn't have a second line center, and you're trying to fit all these guys into those spaces. Cole Perfetti, maybe he can be it. Gabriel Vilardi, maybe he can be it. Vlad Namestnikov, maybe he can be it. Well, there's no question that Sean Monahan can be it. And then you go out and you acquire, what's the one thing that line seemed to be missing?
A right winger.
A strong right winger. Yeah. And so you add a guy who's going to produce the way Tyler Toffoli will. That, to me, signals to your group, listen, I believe in you. And as we talked about yesterday, this first round will be probably, in my mind, the best first round of playoff hockey we're going to see, because you know, four or five really good teams are not going to be in the second round. So it's going to be fascinating to watch, but the Jets have, I think they've matched the arms race, but in a way that's, again, didn't impact their future significantly.
Yeah.
And allows them to really be as competitive as anybody else in the Western Conference.
Look, what we saw yesterday in the lead up to the trade deadline is it was a buyer's market. You know, if you had an asset and you were selling it, that was a depreciated asset this time for whatever reason. You know, there wasn't a huge demand, and that's why the Jets were able to get the players they were able to get. And a lot of the other teams as well were able to get the players that they were able to get for not a huge cost. I mean, if you think about all the trades, if you look at all the trades that were made yesterday, there really aren't. Maybe the one that you dislike the most is Boston's acquisition of the defenseman from Andrew Peak from Columbus. You know, maybe they overpaid, but there weren't a ton of overpays or anything along those lines yesterday because it was a buyer's market. So you were able to get quality players without having to really take players off your roster. The fact that Jets were able to acquire the guys they were able to acquire, albeit rentals, so rentals and not guys with term, and they didn't have to give up, you know, their biggest remaining asset, which was Montreal's second round pick, and they didn't have to give up any of their young prospects, and they didn't have to touch their future to, you know, more to speak of in any significant way or shape or form, speaks to just how much of a buyer's market it was. And Kevin Cheveldayoff did what he needed to do. And he gets full marks for that because entering, you know, the trade deadline time period, especially after what Colorado did and especially after what Dallas did, you would say the Jets were the third of the three teams in the Central Division. They just were. So what does he do? He goes out and he addresses those holes. He improves the team. And now you can't tell me there's a significant difference between the Jets, the Avalanche, and the Dallas Stars in terms of who's the favorite to move on come Stanley Cup playoff.
There hasn't been all year long. And I agree with you guys. Like, Chevy gave up draft picks, 2025 draft picks, 2026 draft picks. Yeah. These guys are
2026,
rentals.
Though. Who cares about 2026?
No, but these are rentals, though. I mean, that is the, I mean, look, everything is good here. I'm not going to pour cold water on this, but I mean, the reality of both Toffoli and Monahan signing, I think, is slim. I think one of those guys could re-sign. Apparently, Toffoli wanted a five-year deal. So, I mean, just keep that in mind here. I mean, this is going all in with rentals. These guys don't have any years. And Kyle Connor, by the way, sorry, I misspoke. He has 2 years left on his deal. Ehlers has 1 year left on his deal.
After
so, for me, the window for the Jets to win is probably 2 to 3 years, guys, right? Like
with this group, yes.
Exactly, with this group, because we don't know what the future holds, right? Ehlers and Connor, and what I mean by that is Ehlers and Connor are going to get big pay bumps. Like, I have no idea what Connor's going to get or what Ehlers is going to get. It's going to be more than they currently make. You got to think that these guys are going to look for a big payday here, whether it's with the Jets or another team. So, but I agree with you, Drew, like, you're fine, and you were already all in at the beginning of the season, and then you were really all in when you acquired Sean Monahan, and so you're just continuing to be all in by giving up all these draft picks.
I mean,
if the Jets win a Stanley Cup, nobody's going to care about the 2025 second round pick, whoever that is.
Banners fly forever, but you know the every move the
so
Jets
do ducks.
Made. Yeah, thank you, Ezzy. Every move the Jets made is logical, and it improves the team. That's what I mean. It was just, you could sit back and say, yes, that makes perfect sense. Yes, you went out and you addressed what you needed to address. The Jets improved their top six. Now, if you're talking, as you mentioned, Ezzy, if your fourth line is some variety of Namestnikov, Iafallo, Barron, Perfetti, whatever it looks like, well, I mean, talk about a fourth line. I mean, two of those guys
were
on your second
line.
Two of those guys were on your second line to start the season.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. Think about how, and it's not like you're diminishing those guys because they haven't really performed, albeit in Perfetti's case, you know, there's been some hiccups lately. That's your fourth line because you've improved your entire roster so dramatically. That's not a fourth line. You basically are trotting out there, what, two, you know, a 1A line with, you know, a 1B line and then two second lines.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what your forward group is.
You could make an argument, Drew, that whatever line Ehlers is on is your number one line, right?
Sure.
Just based on his impact. So you're absolutely right. Now that they have Tyler Toffoli and Sean Monahan, and with Gabe Vilardi back, Dave, You have a 1A and a 1B. You have one of the best third lines in the league.
Which isn't even a third line, which is really, right. I mean, as good as a second line, the way that it's been shut playing shutdown hockey.
And I was just going to add the thought that, you know, and Ezzie's not wrong when he when what he says. You've acquired rentals and you've lost future capital. But ultimately, I mean, I think, and it goes back to that window idea that really this is impacting, it's going to sound crazy, but this is like the 2029 Jets team. 2030 Jets team, where you would expect those second and third rounders to start maybe having some sort of impact. And my point is
if that they if make it to the league, which is a huge if when you're talking about third and fourth round picks.
No, I'm not, but that doesn't matter. The point is that that's what you're supposed to repopulate your farm team with, and that's what's supposed to ultimately maybe get to your NHL team.
That's why, Dave, to quickly go back to you here. That's why having guys like Rutger McGroarty, who's ready to step into the NHL, Brad Lambert, who's ready to step into the NHL pretty soon, Nikita Chibrikov. I mean, you would know
Elias
better than
Salamonson
I would.
Salamonson is the. I mean, I don't know if you saw his goal.
Well, Salamonson's going to play in the AHL, I imagine, before he comes to the Jets.
I think so too.
I would agree so, but I mean,
I'm talking about guys that can step in next year.
Yeah, well, I don't think Salamonson's that far away, to be honest.
No, Salamonson's excellent, and the things he's doing in Sweden are unbelievable. But my point I'm making is that we're not talking about next year, the year after that. We're talking about years from now.
Yeah.
Like, think again. Just remember, right? You've got guys from your 5 years ago, guy from your 2019 draft, who are still trying to make that jump, right, and get into that NHL team. Or the 2020 draft, and it's 4 years later. So my point is that guys from 25, 26, that's 2030. So ultimately, if you're the Winnipeg Jets and things are not gone well in this window, let's say it's like, as he says, it's a 2-3-4 year window, especially with that influx of young, you know, forward talent.
And Dave, what I meant was 2 years at least after this year.
I understand.
I'm including this year because of the uncertainty with Connor and Ehlers' contracts. Look, the Jets window could be 5 years after this year. You've got good prospects we talked about McGroarty, Salamonson, Lambert, Chibrikov. If you're able to supplement some of the guys that are leaving with those good young prospects, Dave, I mean, the Jets could be a contending team for 4 or 5 years. There will eventually be a drop-off. There is for every team. Look at the Calgary Flames. Yeah. Look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, it's coming soon for the Tampa Bay Lightning, by the way. I think they're going to be fine for another couple of years, but it's going to come eventually for them. So it's going to happen for every team.
Right. And I guess I'll just finish off the thought this way, is that if things do not go well in that window, then you trade assets, you replenish those draft picks, and, you know, again, or you get young prospects, and that's what you're going to end up having to do. And again, like I said, that's a 2030 problem when Bailey's in university. I don't think it's something that the Jets are going to have to deal with in that time frame. So it's not a near problem. And so ultimately Jets fans get to enjoy what is, a loaded forward group, a solid. I mean, we talked about yesterday, it wasn't a terribly exciting hockey game, but it was a tight, defensively sound, for the most part, hockey game by Winnipeg.
Jets hockey. That's how Rick Bowness wants the team to look. He wants the team to be stifling when it comes to the center of the ice, and Seattle couldn't get anywhere near the Jets net, particularly in the third period. That's, you know, that is a carbon copy of what the Winnipeg Jets looked like when they were playing, you know, the Boston Bruins at home in December. Yep. And Boston was just, you know, hamstrung by the Winnipeg Jets and the Jets' skill set at keeping them everything to the outside. That's what the Jets looked like yesterday. I want to spend the next 10 minutes or so. Murat's going to join us at the bottom of the hour talking about the Colin Miller acquisition, because all the attention has been on Tyler Toffoli, and rightfully so, because he certainly is a perfect fit for what the Jets needed in that second line right wing slot, where whoever he plays with, he's going to slot into the Jets top six. I think Colin Miller, if you look at the defense that were out there, you know, the UFA defensemen, the rental defensemen that were out there, Colin Miller to me just seems like a seamless fit for the Winnipeg Jets as well. I mean, he's not flashy, but he's effective. I think he's better than probably his reputation or his name garners him. He's been effective at most every stop he's played in. He's been in a bit of an insulated role in New Jersey, but he's possession positive. He's expected goals positive when he's on the ice. To me, you just plop him in there, and is he a prototypical top four right side defenseman? No, probably not. but I don't know that the Jets had one, and I don't know that there was one available. And given the options that were out there, I'd say that Colin Miller is as good as a rental that there was on the free agency market. You know, once Sean Walker wasn't an option for the Jets, as he.
Yeah, Miller's good. I mean, he's an above average third pairing defenseman. I don't think you would say that he's an above average second pairing defenseman, but the thing is, he has been very solid throughout his career in whichever role he needs to play, right? Like, he's the type of guy that I think he's almost like, the way I would look at compare Colin Miller is like, he's almost like Dylan DeMello, but better offensively. Like, earlier in his career, I want to say he had like a 35 or 40 point season with the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, offensively, he did not, was not having a great year.
I think it was like 44 points, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got offensive ability. Yeah.
41 points is his career high with the Golden Knights back in 17-18.
Right. So he's got offensive ability. He's got a really good shot. Yeah. I don't know that he's necessarily going to play power play on the Jets, but he's a good, solid defenseman. And yes, we could have that argument, you know, whether he's better than Neil Pionk. The numbers certainly suggest he is better than Neil Pionk. So he could play with Brendan Dillon on that second pair. He could also play with Dylan Sandberg on the third pair. But I think it goes back to what we were talking about on last night's postgame show. What this does is this pushes Logan Stanley down the lineup, and it just makes the overall depth of the Jets defense better. So yes, Miller is a good player. I mean, he's an above average defenseman. Like I said, whether he plays on the third pair or the second pair, it's going to make the Jets top six defense better.
Yes.
Right. So yes, I mean, Jacob Chychrun, you can't compare the apples and oranges. You can't compare Colin Miller to Jacob Chychrun. You can't compare Colin Miller to Chris Tanev. I mean, Chris Tanev is a better defenseman. He's your, like Drew said, he's a prototypical shutdown defenseman, Dave. But yeah, Colin Miller was a very, I think, quietly really solid add by Chevy. I mean, he obviously knows him very well. Just played for the Dallas Stars last year in their top six. Stars are a good hockey team. So if you're hanging in there in the Dallas Stars top six, Dave, that shows you that you're a pretty good defenseman. So yeah, I like the Miller acquisition, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, does Bonus start him with Dylan or with Dylan Sandberg, or what happens there? Because obviously somebody's going to come out of the lineup, and obviously Nate Schmidt is, you know, the likely candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume, sorry, Dave, that it's Nate Schmidt is the guy who gets bumped out right now. But I just think that when Pionk is having one of those games where he might be a little bit chaotic in his game, you know, maybe you move Miller up and you slide Pionk down to play against some lesser competition. I mean, Neil Pionk isn't a second pair right side defenseman just because there's so much chaos in his game. But if you give him softer minutes, you know, on a third pair, you know, then I think you're a lot more, you're willing to accept that a lot more. It's a lot more.
And Pionk and Sandberg have played together, right? And they've been solid together. So I agree with you, Drew. I do think Colin Miller is going to end up being paired with Brendan Dillon.
Yeah, I think so too. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say, Bob asked if the Jets have to waiver anybody or send anyone down to the Moose. The roster size limits are eliminated once the trade deadline hits. So 23-man roster, no longer. The only thing you have to do is be cap compliant, which the Jets are. So, and of course, now they're into the only allowed four recalls before the end of the season. So that's something to, of course, teams get around that because they make emergency recalls.
That's right. So there's a difference between emergency recalls and regular recalls. You're allowed four regular recalls. And really that's why, as long as you can stay cap compliant from now until the end of the regular season, you don't see guys moving up and moving back from the NHL to the AHL because you don't want to, you know, recall a guy with one of your four regular recalls, then send them back and then have to recall them. I mean, you know, basically you can almost throw the salary cap and the, you know, waivers sort of out the window from now until the end of the season. They become much less of a factor than it was before the trade deadline.
And so look, it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening, but ultimately, and just to clarify in case folks have some questions, neither Colin Miller nor Tyler Toffoli will be playing tonight. They'll be available probably Monday to play against the Washington Capitals here in
Winnipeg. They have to find a place to live, Dave.
Maybe they'll live together. Maybe it'll be like a stepbrother sort of thing, Ezzy. Who knows? But
that's what you and Ezzy do usually.
Yeah, usually. But anyways, so this is one of those. I like the addition of Miller because I think what you've done is you've bolstered your defensive depth. And that's the Jets defensively, they've played loose, but the defensemen have been playing pretty well together. So I, like I said, I don't know that you're necessarily going to 100% bump somebody, because, you know, you've got an internal chemistry. You may want to get him in the rotation. We'll see what ends up happening. But to me, what you've done is you've insulated your group to having an injury and then suddenly saying, okay, you know, here comes Logan Stanley, right? Here comes Ville Heinola. Here comes Kyle Capobianco. I'm not saying they're bad defensemen, but I'm just saying that this is giving, look, this is a guy who went to the Stanley Cup Finals, right? The Jets, as good a team as they are.
Yeah.
Right. And I've made this point for a while now. They haven't won a lot, right? They have one run to the Western Conference Finals in 2017-18, but this isn't a group that has that pedigree, Stanley Cup rings, or, you know, knowing what it takes to be in the Stanley Cup. Tyler Toffoli, he brings that. Colin Miller, he brings that.
Yeah.
Obviously Nate Schmidt has that, but my point is that you don't have a huge amount of it. So when you can bring that in, guys who know what it takes to win in the playoffs, guys who know what it takes, that sort of sacrifice, mm-hmm. that's just going to, it's just adding to the level of, I don't want to say intelligence, but the knowledge base of this team. And because of that, it'll serve the Jets well, whether it's on the ice or off of it.
88 career playoff games for Tyler Toffoli, 40 career playoff games for Colin Miller. They know how to play come April, May, June, and now they're going to do their wares and showcase their wares for the Winnipeg Jets moving forward. Before we head to break, we want to wish Jeff Bowes very well. Jeff says he's been in the St. Boniface Hospital for the past 3 weeks after an operation. We know Jeff is a super fan here on the show. Jeff, we hope that you are convalescing well. We hope that you'll be out soon, and we hope that you'll be able to celebrate with Jets fans soon, as you say in that comment. So sending right on, Jeff all the best.
Get on well this soon.
Saturday morning. Murat Atesh, our good friend from The Athletic, he joins us next for more Jets talk. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. It's Saturday morning. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg. We remind you that later tonight, in about, 14 hours' time, we're going to be back with the Illegal Curve post-game show following the Jets and the Canucks. We know the Jets won in Seattle last night. They try to make it 2-for-2 on the weekend trip to the Pacific Northwest. Join us after the Jets and the Canucks later on tonight. We know that our good friend Murat Atesh is going to have full coverage of tonight's game, just like he's had full coverage of the Jets leading up to the trade deadline. He joins us on the show now. Murat, on behalf of Illegal Curve, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Koch brothers, we would like to apologize on behalf of Dave Manuk for neglecting to post your article in this morning's Illegal Curve morning papers. Dave M., apologize and grovel at the feet of Murat.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. There was the article that Murat did with Chris Johnston is in the papers, as is the one that was Eric.
Murat, educate Dave. Educate him.
By the way, the face that Murat just made was like sad face emoji. Like, that's what that was.
a puppy that didn't get the snack that he was hoping for. Dave, I got another one. At about 5 this morning, I put together the inside how the Winnipeg Jets became a Stanley Cup contender again. Little 5-year story arc. Some Brian Little appreciation, some, you know, step by step, how did this happen? Because Winnipeg was supposed to lose so many good players. Well, what changed? And Dave, you know, you're one of the nicest guys in sports media. So I'm really milking this. I feel horrible that was not seemed worthy of inclusion on your morning papers today.
So just to make a couple of clarifications. First of all, it goes to show you what a terrible person Drew Mandel is, both for bringing this up and for recognizing that it wasn't in the morning papers, although I appreciate that Drew read them because I wasn't aware that he did.
No, I didn't read the morning papers. No. Murat tweeted at you. Murat tweeted at us. I woke up this morning and I saw Murat's tweet saying that he felt underappreciated. He felt that he was missing the love. And everyone knows that I would never miss an opportunity to acknowledge Murat and wave at Murat and give Murat a big hug. And so I read his article while lamenting Dave M's sloppiness, despite the fact I wasn't even wearing my glasses. So I'm lying in bed, I'm squinting,
and Drew's blind when he doesn't have his glasses.
I'm blind as a bat. And I read the beautiful prose that Murat put together and the insightful analysis, and I'm thinking, Dave M. left this out of the morning papers. For shame, Dave M. For shame.
Well, yeah, I guess that I'll own the shame. I deserve the shame, I guess, because I was not aware. As Murat knows, I like to post his stuff whenever I get it and get an opportunity to do so. So
I'm excited to read that article. Let's forget all this other stuff. I want to read that piece, article
Murat. While Murat is on the show. So it will make sure that it makes the morning papers. And even if I do an afternoon links, I promise you it will be in that as well.
There you go.
You guys got to understand what a great honor it is to be featured. So, you know, these are things that hit me right here, you know?
Thank you. I had to get that off my chest. Murat, good morning. Nice of you to join us despite Dave's shortcomings.
Whistleblower Mandel over here.
Obviously, to talk about the trade deadline, talk about the Jets' performance last night, the Jets moving forward. I guess we'll start with that article. And you highlighted it and you referenced it, and it's not the first time you've done so. But just the fact that Brian Little played such a huge role in allowing the Jets to be able to make the moves that they made last night to improve themselves and put themselves right again at the top of the list of contenders for when the Stanley Cup playoff run begins. Sort of, why not, for those in our audience who might not be fully aware, how does Brian Little, a guy who hasn't played hockey for the Winnipeg Jets in, you know, over 5 years now, how does he deserve the credit for this?
Yeah, there are two things I like in a good sports story. One is when a small, seemingly, you know, insignificant decision or move ends up paying off with huge dividends down the line. I'm a big fan of that. Another thing I'm a big fan of is just the idea that from whatever chair you have, whatever role you have, that you're willing to give all of yourself to the team that you're playing for. And, you know, whether that's us in the media, whether that's the actual competitive locker room stuff, Brian Little gave himself for 843 games of Winnipeg Jet hockey. When that unfortunately was stopped with the errant puck to the head, well, he wasn't able to continue with the Jets. So his contract continued. It still continues on until this summer. It goes on. Winnipeg, while Brian Little was still on the team, had to use long-term injured reserve, which is, you know, a little bit of salary cap nuance, which essentially takes away an ability that teams have to stay under the cap limit. And every day that they stay under the cap maximum, they're able to build up cap space that they can use later. That's a good advantage to have at the trade deadline. Winnipeg wasn't able to have that for seasons under Brian Little with LTIR using that particular cap wrinkle. So 2022, in one of the least publicized trades that Kevin Cheveldayoff will ever make, he asks Brian Little if he's willing to waive his no trade clause to be sent to the Arizona Coyotes. And of course, he's not going to play hockey for the Arizona Coyotes. Unfortunately, those days are done. But Brian Little says, yeah, absolutely, I'll do that. I'll waive my no trade clause. Winnipeg was able to pull off that trade. And so for two seasons since, Winnipeg has been back in the minority of teams who build up cap space every single day by staying under the limit. There aren't many teams who get to do that anymore because so many teams end up using long-term injured reserve. The Jets have maximized that. That's Vladislav Namestnikov and, you know, Niederreiter last season, and their ability to stay under the cap and build up space gives them the ability to add Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli, Colin Miller, and maintain a 25-person roster, bigger than 23 from here down the stretch. This is huge dividends. It's because Brian Little did a small, selfless thing that helped his team for years to follow, years after his last NHL game, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
And Murat, I don't know if you thought of this, but I love the synchronicity because I remember who the team was that Brian Little's last game was against. It was the New Jersey Devils, of course, because I was at that game with my sister up in the 300. So the synchronicity being the Jets acquire the two Devils prior to the trade deadline with Brian Little's cap space, right? Not sure if you thought of that, but that was something that was going through my mind. Maybe it's just because I have a beautiful mind, but I have no idea. But let's talk about Tyler Toffoli here, because, you know, obviously Murat, Toffoli was the big acquisition yesterday, and all due respect to Colin Miller, but Toffoli obviously comes with, you know, a more accomplished resume. And a lot of Jets fans are looking at this like, you know, this could possibly be the last piece to put us over the top, right? I just look at it like Tyler Toffoli is a great hockey player. He scores goals. He can play on the power play. He's got the championship pedigree. He's got a lot of playoff experience. Like, it just seems like if you were to draw up, you know, Chevy, like who Chevy had, you know, at the top of his list or, you know, near the top of his list, Toffoli had to be that guy.
I mean, I literally wrote an article called The Perfect Jets Trade Deadline, and I went heavy into the idea that Tyler Toffoli would be the perfect fit. Went up on Wednesday, guys. Was that in the morning papers? but the reason for that is exactly what you said. If you could have looked at the Winnipeg Jets roster, you know, just a few days ago and evaluated what do you think they need? And you heard Rick Bowness talk about Nikolaj Ehlers as an ideal left wing. They went out and they made the big move to get Sean Monahan a month ago. He's fit in great. Well, what do they need? They need a right shooting forward. They need somebody who's going to get the puck to the net, create scoring chances, probably a shoot first mentality, especially if he ends up playing with Ehlers, who does a few things before shooting a lot of the time. And you go through, you also look at the fact that prior to Foley's acquisition, Laurent Brossoit was the only cup winner on the Winnipeg Jets. They would want experience. They would want a right shooting forward who's talented enough to play in that top six, who scores goals, who drives shot volume. Every one of those aspects is something that Tyler Toffoli checks off. And then the folks that I've been talking to in the last 24 hours tell me he's one of the most intelligent people we will ever interview, one of the most engaging and thoughtful people on that front too. And so you know the Jets were into the idea that he'd be a fit in their culture and in their locker room as well.
Well, Murat, just a couple of things to clarify. Number one, the article is now prominently featured at the top of the Winnipeg Jets morning papers. So there is no concern. The article you wrote on Wednesday is also already in the papers from Wednesday or Thursday, whenever it was. So you don't have to worry. Full coverage of the Athletic Winnipeg via Legal Curve.
And Murat, all future articles have already been posted as well.
I already know what you're writing on Sunday, and that is also already in the Sunday morning papers.
I'm so glad I whined.
Well, I mean, it's
not so much that you whined, Murat, although that helped. It's more of our, you know, Illegal Curve has a firm policy that if we can ever throw one another under the bus, then we do it as quickly and viciously as we possibly can.
That bus is always running in the back lane. Like, it's just ready to drive over one of us at all times.
Well, but you know what? The one thing I want to talk to you about, and obviously we were both there for Kevin Cheveldayoff's presser yesterday. First of all, I mean, I don't think we've seen some joyful Kevin Cheveldayoff pressers of late, but that one seemed to be the most relaxed and the most happy he was with. I'd like to know who the defenseman was that he tried to trade for and offered 2 first-round picks. Like, every once in a while, Kevin Cheveldayoff off the cuff will give you a little nugget. And that was,
I thought it was Gavrikov. Was it Gavrikov, Murat? Is that who you thought it was?
Too much for Gavrikov.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. Yeah, that seems too much. I don't know. I really don't know.
No, I don't either, because it wasn't clear. You know, I mean, people are like,
could have been Jacob Chychrun, Dave.
Yeah, no, it could. I mean, again, there's a lot of good defensemen, but it's interesting to see, to hear. I've heard him yesterday kind of throw that one out there, a little meat for us. And then it was funny because then Paul Friesen, who was asking the questions, I said, well, do you want to share who that was at the end? And then the line of questioning went to Murat, and Murat was like, well, what about, why don't you tell us about that? Are you sure you don't want to? So we were trying to get it unsuccessfully, unfortunately. What I wanted to ask you about is the defenseman. He didn't throw 2 firsts to get, but to the acquisition of Colin Miller and what that does to bolster this defensive group, maybe push a guy like Logan Stanley down a little bit. But how do you see his use? Do you see him supplanting someone like Nate Schmidt or maybe Neil Pionk? What's your view as to how they're going to use Colin Miller?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by what they choose to do, because if you look at Colin Miller's past, and you know, I was going through, I thought to myself, haven't I written about him before? And I've actually written about Colin Miller as a potential Jets acquisition a couple of times back when he was a Buffalo Sabre a couple years ago. And so I've got at least my own opinions on this player with a few iterations. And once upon a time, he was a top four defenseman who regularly played top 4 minutes. That Buffalo Sabres team was a little bit outmatched and overwhelmed, but he was able to saw off tough minutes against good competition. And that was an impressive thing to see in his resume. I don't think he's going to put up the type of points he did when he was a Vegas Golden Knight misfit several years ago playing on the power play. I don't know that he's going to get that kind of prime opportunity, but he does shoot the puck awfully hard. That's a definite skill that he has. He's a plus skater. He's a mobile guy. If you look more recently, the New Jersey Devils, and I think Dallas as well, used him as a player on the third pairing who sort of delivers that slightly too good for a third pairing type of results.
Yep.
A little bit more sheltered, a little bit of a different role than a top four would get, but he was crushing those minutes, at least analytically and in terms of those results. And I think that that's probably the ideal spot for him on the Winnipeg Jets roster too, perhaps alongside Dylan Sandberg on that third pair. But that almost seems unfair to Nate Schmidt, who's put together a real strong run of play over the last several months, certainly struggled early on in the season. I don't think he's going to supplant Neil Pionk from the top four role, but it's a role he has played before. And I think the most compelling thing is that Winnipeg comes out of this trade with options because they checked off another one of their clear needs, which was one more right shooting defenseman. You know, you got Schmidt playing on his offside, which he's capable of. But I think they wanted a little bit more balance and a little bit more depth.
Murat Attash, our guest on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the trade deadline, talking about the Jets moving forward. Of course, the Jets tonight in Vancouver to face the Pacific leading and Western Conference leading Canucks in what should be a hell of a contest. Murat, let's sort of prognosticate. You know, you look at the arms race in the West, and we know that, you know, the Dallas Stars made their move in getting Chris Tanev. We know the Colorado Avalanche made a significant number of moves and retooled their entire lineup. We know what the Jets did. How do you see that the Western Conference shaking out right now? Is there a team that you have as the favorite, or do you really think that, you know, between the Jets, the Stars, the Avs, the Oilers, the, you know, the Canucks and the Golden Knights, you know, that those six teams are really battling and it's anybody's ballgame as to who comes out of the West?
Yeah, I'm dazzled by the Western Conference right now. I thought there were some big-time trade deadline additions to teams that were already well-built. Mm-hmm. And I know Vegas has some injury troubles, and, you know, Winnipeg boy Mark Stone is dealing with a lacerated spleen, and we'll see if he returns in time for the playoffs or not. But there are, I'm going to say, six or seven rosters in the Western Conference that I think are good enough to go on a long run or perhaps even win the Stanley Cup. So for me, my attention turns to that central division. I think Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg are three of the strongest teams in the West. I think it is a shame that two of them are going to go head-to-head in the first round, and one of them is going to be eliminated. That's it. That's all. Doesn't matter that you went out and shopped big. Doesn't matter that you built for years for this moment. This is one round, and you're done. So I think the most important thing Winnipeg can do is compete and aim for the top spot in the Central Division. Ideally get a wild card opponent. Maybe that's Pierre-Luc Dubois and the Los Angeles Kings. I don't know. But there's a group of teams, Winnipeg being certainly one of them, that I think has a chance to go very, very deep. And I really like the roster construction on the Jets part. But then you go through what these other teams have done. And we haven't even mentioned Edmonton, who's sort of doing under pressure with Leon Draisaitl's contract expiring in the not too distant future, and they've gone as all in as they can do. There's a lot of quality in the West.
I want to ask you about something to do with the Oilers. I want to go back to Tyler Toffoli for a second, because before we went on air today, I almost said that, you know, it's almost like, you know, Chevy keeps doing this, and it's like GMs haven't seen his track record. And what I'm talking about is you don't have to give up that 2024 second round pick. You didn't have to obviously give up a first round pick to get Toffoli. And I'm bringing it back to the Oilers here, Murat. They had to give up a first round pick to bring in Adam Henrique, right? So, like, to me, that just shows you, like, when just comparing the Henrique return, and obviously Carrick was involved as well, but it just shows you how savvy Chevy is in his moves. Yes, he's made some bad moves. They all haven't been home runs, but I mean, when you look at the Pierre-Luc Dubois return and you look at the Monahan trade, the Toffoli trade, you haven't given up anybody off your roster or any prospects. And what it goes back to is what we were talking about the first segment. I mean, the Jets are going to lose players in the summer, right? It could be Toffoli. He's a pending UFA. Maybe the Jets signed Toffoli. But what I'm trying to say is, because you have guys like Rucker, McGroarty, Brad Lambert, Nikita Chibrikov, some of these guys are going to be able to step into the lineup next year. So I just think Chevy's asset management has been fantastic.
Yeah, you know, in this piece that I keep whining about how the Jets rebuilt themselves into a Stanley Cup contender, there's a section in that where we detail move by move, trade by trade from 2022 to today on Kevin Chevalier's behalf in restructuring the Winnipeg Jets. And you look at that Andrew Copp trade in 2022, wow, and you hold that against some of the prices that people were paying this year. And it's two things, really. I think each year's market is a little bit different depending on what's available and the different pressures that each team is under. For example, I think Winnipeg struck early on Sean Monahan because Montreal was going to have a lengthy runway with Monahan as the number one center available on the market. I think Winnipeg also pivoted from at least a casual interest in Elias Lindholm that same week. And they knew Monahan was their guy that they wanted. And hence that was worth the first round pick because they thought he was going to be a fit. So there's different scenarios that affect everything. When you stack together Cheveldayoff's run from 2022 to now, it is a series of wins. Every major move involves a little bit of victory in it. And to think that Vilardi, Iafallo, and Kupari make less than what Los Angeles pays Pierre-Luc Dubois for less production at this stage than Gabriel Vilardi is giving Winnipeg. To think that Winnipeg paid, I'm going to say, less for Toffoli and Miller than it got back for Andrew Kopp all those years ago, including some of that next wave of talent like Salomonson and Brad Lambert, like you just pointed out. It seems like the Jets have done a good job not only of rebuilding for now, but by keeping their existing roster intact and the guys that they've drafted recently, not necessarily picks, but recent young players who have made progress. There's a medium-term protection for the Jets in the next wave of their growth that they've been able to look after themselves as well.
Yeah, and we were talking about that before you came on. We said, like, look, ultimately, if you need to, I mean, these picks that you're dealing away really are impacting you for 2029, 2030. They're not impacting you for the next 2, 3, 4 years because those guys are still a ways away. So it doesn't hamper you to the same degree as perhaps, you know, it would have been if you traded away Brad Lambert or Elias Salomonson or one of those kind of upper echelon guys. You know, Murat, it's funny because from my perspective, just listen, and I don't know about yours, but we talked about this on the post-game show and then afterwards. How did you take the Gabriel Vilardi situation? Did you think that was a little bit of gamesmanship by the Jets in order to try and keep their costs potentially down? Because that's the way I saw it. When we kept hearing things kind of, when Rick Bonus told us on Tuesday morning that he'd have an update for Gabriel Vilardi on Friday, even though he was, in theory, there was a scheduled practice Wednesday and they had a practice scheduled for Thursday in Seattle. Did you think there was some, you know, trying to maybe not allow, again, we don't know the status. Kevin Cheveldayoff told us after that he's in Winnipeg. He's expected to skate on Monday. But there was just a lot of uncertainty, and I wasn't sure from my perspective as to whether the Jets were using that as kind of a, let's not make it sound worse because we don't want to have to drive up our costs.
Yeah, I don't know that that's the case, but I think that even if it was remotely gray for them, uncertain at all, I think that was the right way to play it. You don't want to broadcast to the NHL that your number one right wing, who you paid a big price for, is going to be out for any length of time at all, necessitating, you know, a Tyler Toffoli type ad. He's meant to be a complimentary player, even though Toffoli scores 30 goals per 82 games. The idea is that you're cementing a roster into place, not getting desperate and replacing Vilardi. And I think there is a little bit of uncertainty on the Vilardi timeline. I know Rick Bonus said that he's hopeful that Vilardi will get back on the ice on Monday. And then they'll see where he is at from there. I know that he said that there's an intensification of his workouts and that he's making progress, but I'm not sure that this is a next game sort of thing for Vilardi. I think it might be a minute. At least it's possible for that. Mm-hmm. So if there's any concern of that at all, I do agree that it's the best way to have played it, to have just kept things a little bit close and not projected any weakness where no weakness was needed to be made clear.
Murat Attash, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You know, Murat, you know, obviously you sit here and the Western Conference and the Central Division is just an absolute, you know, it's a knife fight between those three teams. Of the three, and I know this might be an impossible one, which team do you see having the biggest flaws between the Jets, the Avs, and the Stars after the trade deadline? Or is it just so too close to say that any of the three teams have what you would describe as a significant flaw?
That is a great question. And I think that, you know, I can't help but acknowledge a certain amount of bias because I know the Jets pretty well and I don't know those other teams as well as I could, right? Like, right. I don't have that same level of intense knowledge. I am generally leery of a team that makes as many moves as the Avalanche did. I think they got a lot of good pieces, but that seems like a substantial shift and a substantial acknowledgement that they needed some help as well. Obviously, they've got some absolutely elite players. There's a, it's not a last dance element the same way you might worry about Edmonton and Leon Draisaitl and what the contracts are going to look like in the future. But Rantanen has 1 year left on his deal after this. There is a sense of urgency with that organization as well. So I think that they're pushing a lot into competing this year and continue to be a good team. I do wonder about that. I wonder about the goaltending as well. Dallas is an interesting one for me because every time Winnipeg plays the Dallas Stars, I leave thinking to myself that Dallas is just a really excellent blend of patient, of willing to commit to its structure during the tough parts of the game, and then willing to push numbers forward and jump a second wave of D into the attack and really make teams pay for the mistakes that they make. And you know who that reminds me of is last season's Vegas Golden Knights.
Right.
So like that's just a trait that they have in common. I don't think Dallas is as deeply built, and certainly they're relying on some electrifying youth right now. Man, it's just going to be a slugfest. I couldn't even begin to guess what the right answer to this is.
I think Murat, not that anybody cares what I think. That's why we have you on, because people care what you think. But I think that they're all like right up there. Like I think the difference between these two teams, and just look at the points, right? Like the Jets obviously have the games in hand, but I mean, if you asked, let's say 20 hockey people or 10 hockey people, I don't know why I picked 20. I think you're probably going to get three people that say the Jets, you know, four people that say Dallas, three people that say Colorado in terms of which one of those teams is the best team. And Murat, I agree with you, by the way, about the Avalanche and the moves they made. I'm actually pretty shocked they didn't get a backup goalie. Eustace Annan is currently their backup behind Gorgiev. Gorgiev's been fine this year, but I think that gives the Jets a huge advantage. Hellebuck and Brossoit versus Gorgiev and Annan. Yes, Ottinger. You know, I give Dallas, you know, a lot of props for their goaltending. Scott Wedgwood is the backup, of course. But aren't you shocked they didn't go out and acquire a veteran backup? Maybe it's just me.
I'm curious. I mean, I don't know if that reflects a lack of interest in that idea or a lack of enjoyment about what the prices would have been. I think Anadin's got a pair of shutouts in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he's
well.
Played well. Yeah, he's been fine.
So maybe there's a sense that, hey, we believe, or maybe they're just that confident in Gorgiev or the quality of their team. I don't know, but it does seem like if you're going to stack up a spot where they're a step behind Dallas and Winnipeg, to be sure, that would be it. I mean, we know in small samples that anything can happen. A bounce, a save off of a skate blade. We saw Marc-Andre Fleury do that enough times in 2018 to know that you can completely dominate a team in certain games at 5-on-5. And a goalie just getting the right piece of a skate on a puck from the slot, I'm seeing one in my mind right now, can change the flow of things, or one giveaway or one play, and all of a sudden it looks like you know, Connor Hellebuck had a worse save percentage than LB last year, didn't he, in the first round series against Vegas. And we know that even having the best guy doesn't mean the best numbers at the end of the day. So maybe there's a little bit of that too.
Rod, I'm not sure if you've heard of this guy, Rutger McGroarty, but I got to ask you about him because, you know, we had Kenny Wiebe on recently. We asked him about Rutger. We asked Ted Wyman, sports editor of the Winnipeg Sun, about Rutger McGroarty. Like, there's a lot of excitement, I think. That would almost be an understatement, Murat, because a lot of Jets fans are hoping that as soon as the season is done with the University of Michigan, he signs and then he goes right into the lineup and gets a hat trick. What is your take on what Rutger McGroarty could do for the Jets down the stretch and in the playoff run? Do you still see him just maybe getting a game or two? What do you see? Because I think people really want to hear your take on it, because it's a little bit of Rutger mania here in Winnipeg.
I honestly don't know if people want to hear my take on it, because I think that the Rutger mania has grown a little bit out of proportion. Mm-hmm. I think he's a first round pick. I think that he is a phenomenal character, a phenomenal human being who we saw at development camp, even in a room full of leaders, the Colby Barlows of the world. He's the one that people gravitate towards. Media had a great time talking to him. He's got a personality that makes you think that the Winnipeg Jets are going to want to put a captain's a C on his jersey someday. There is a lot to love about that. And then when you see him take a season, last year he played on one of the hottest college lines in the country, but there's a sense that, okay, was he propped up by his line mates? He's so young. How did he score so many points? Well, look what he's done this year, right? He's been an absolute force for Michigan. he gets hurt. And so now you're going to bet against him. He's got, I think, a punctured lung. There's rib issues and things like that. What does he do? He comes back. He leads the United States to a World Junior gold medal. This is somebody you don't bet against. This is not somebody who gets held back by these types of things. And then he scored an awful lot of points since that time. I know he's had an off game or two, but he's been an extremely productive player. So why in the world would I then go and say, well, hold on, let's pump the brakes a little bit? Why with all of that momentum? The Winnipeg Jets are in the business of now, of today, of winning down the stretch, cementing that top seed and going as deep into the playoffs as possible. What that means for the Jets is that Cole Perfetti might not be an everyday player. He's got NHL experience. He's produced as a top six player for half a season before his minutes dwindled. That's, you know, he may be on the fourth line with Namestnikov and Iafallo. They have had success. There might be games where he comes out and Morgan Barron goes in because he's had success. There's more experience there. It means that Brad Lambert, Nikita Chibrikov, who you know better than me, you watch the Moose all of the time, but they drive results for those for that team. It means that he'd be skipping the line over those players as well. And I think that if the anticipation is that a Rucker McGroarty is going to leapfrog 15 NHL quality forwards that Winnipeg has on its roster today and step into meaningful minutes, I just think that's a touch unrealistic. If he does sign, I think it's going to be more about bringing him around the culture, letting him be part of what he's going to be a big part of down for many, many, many years. See what a playoff run looks like in Winnipeg. Feel that electric whiteout atmosphere. See, ideally, playoff success, and certainly be ready to go if the circumstances dictate. I just think that there's such a deep team. There's a coach who's in it to win it. This could be his last year coaching the Jets. He's got a club option for next year, and we haven't heard what the future holds for him yet as well. I think everything says this is a team of veterans looking to push and win and leave no margin for error. And I don't think that that putting an NCAA star into an NHL lineup in the playoffs is necessarily that answer.
Murat Ateş covers the Winnipeg Jets for The Athletic.
Boom.
He's verbose. He's analytical. He's insightful.
I agree with Murat, by the way. I think Rucker maybe gets a game, and I don't think that's a problem at all because, as you said, Murat, this is such a deep forward group, especially now that they've brought in Tyler Toffoli. So I don't necessarily see him playing, you know, 20 playoff games for the Jets, but I think it was a great answer.
Well, thank you.
I was going to say, as he interrupted me so that he could get that soliloquy in, and even though I was on a roll.
Murat his props, forgive, always.
I know, giving him his props, and then you interrupted me, and now you threw me for a loop. That's what you did there.
Read Murat's article.
Does he and I see eye to eye? Should I be leery about that?
We always see eye to eye.
You never want to look at the eyes.
We love having
you on.
That's why I text you every week to come on.
Yeah. Murat, thank you, buddy. We'll let you get to it. Jets Canucks later tonight. I'm sure you'll have some coverage of that. And of course, subscribe to The Athletic and read Murat's great work there on the regular, even if Dave M doesn't always acknowledge it as quickly as he should. But I wave. I always wave. That's what I do now. Thank you. Good seeing you. We'll do it again
Thanks,
soon.
Guys. Have a great day.
You too. There he goes, Murat Ateş, joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Does he not make a lot of good points about Rucker McGroarty, Dave? Like, Dave has been documenting Rucker. Like, he scored, what, two goals yesterday or a hat trick for the University
game winner
of Michigan?
He had the game winner against Notre Dame yesterday. Yeah. I saw that.
I'm excited. I am with everybody in the chat. Ask Dave. I talk about Rucker McGroarty all the time. I feel like he's like the third Tkachuk brother. Like, he's an amazing player. I just think you have to, you know, wait. Like, just wait another year. He's most likely going to play for the Jets next year. It's just he's still very, very young.
Who
That's
does he supplant out of the lineup? I mean, you know, before the trade deadline, sure, you could say that there was a hole in the roster that, you know, he could have filled in. But right now, you know, who does he supplant out of the lineup? And I don't think that there's anyone that's an obvious answer there because those guys are, look, he's never played a game at the NHL level. He's never played a game against men. He's never played a professional hockey game. Let's relax a little bit.
You have David Gustafsson, a second round pick, Rasmus Kupari, a first round pick. These guys are your 13th and 14th forwards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of those guys might even go to the Moose, Dave. If Perfetti gets bumped out of the lineup, one of Gustafsson or Kupari could, I don't know what'll happen, but I mean, it's, I guess you have a 25 player roster at this point, right?
Yeah, you don't. I mean, you they're still subject to waivers, so you can't just like send them. But so,
but the point is, you have good players that are going to be out of the lineup now that the Jets have acquired Toffoli.
My guess is that, and that's why we were talking about a little bit earlier, and I know you want to go to break, Drew, but I think that's just that idea of why Rick Bonus will try and rotate. That's why Kupari came in for Gustafson yesterday. I don't think he wants anyone sitting too often. He had Logan Stanley come in for Nate Schmidt. I think the biggest mistake you can make, especially when your team is winning, is allowing guys to sit for too long. And we always lament that. So I think the idea of just getting in that rotating cast is good because, number one, I think it's important to keep everybody engaged. But number two, it keeps guys fresh and it allows the older guys, like Nate Schmidt's, I guess, technically an older guy in the league, gives him a night off here and there. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
It certainly is not. Lots more Jets talk to come as we continue looking at the trade deadline that happened. How do the Jets stack up against the Stars, the Avalanche, and the other teams in the Western Conference? We talk about that next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, it's a Saturday morning. Don't go anywhere. We are live.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos.
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rolly's and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Boston Pizza harnessed Fanalytics to test if the game is better at home or at Boston Pizza. The results are irrefutable. Catch the game at Boston Pizza, powered by Fanalytics.
We did it again!
You're on fire, man.
There's power in a handshake. After a great game or great deal, it shows professionalism and respect. Two qualities Zappia Group Realty take pride in. You don't build a business where 95% of your clients are referred by others without honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. To sell your home for more in less time, shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Get started at zappiagroup.com.
I once in high school had to write a story or an essay about an empty chair, and that just sort of jogged my memory as I look back at Dave's empty chair there, where Dave has somehow just, you know, dissolved into, I guess, a puddle of goo or something and is now not visible on camera. I think
I don't know about you, Drew, but Dave's never looked better.
I mean, the chair looks quite plush. I think that's a plush looking chair. Yeah. And that's not usually a word that you associate with Dave.
IKEA.
You think it's, no, I don't think it's IKEA. I am pretty sure that looks too fancy for IKEA. We know that
the Swedes are fanatic about their furniture.
Yes, exactly. We know that Dave doesn't mess with IKEA stuff, has he? That's that's too lowbrow for a man of Dave M's.
Yeah, he's more of an EQ3 guy.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome back, everybody, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're not sure where Dave went, but I'm sure he'll return momentarily. Big thanks to Murat Ateş for joining us. Great interview, as it always is.
I heard a door close, Drew.
What's that?
I heard a door close.
You heard a door
Dave
close?
Dave M is about to sit down.
There he goes. He's got a finger wagging now. There you go. Welcome back, Dave. You know, the commercial breaks, they're not that long, just for the record. So, you know, if you want to factor that timing in going forward, that's okay, though.
Bathroom break for Dave M.
Yeah, like, come on. Give the man a bathroom break, for God's sakes.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Reminder, later tonight, the Illegal Curve post-game show, as we do our third show in about a 24-hour period. Running on fumes, that's okay. That's the way we do it here on the program. I wanted to talk to you guys about how the Jets now stack up against their other Western Conference opponents. You know, when you look at
These teams like Jenga. Let's just stack them side by side.
Okay, let's do that. You want to rank them? You want to rank which team is your favorite at this point in time moving forward?
It's hard to do, Drew. Like, I still have Dallas. Let's just get right into it. I still have Dallas ahead of the Jets and the Avalanche, but just slightly. And I think you just saw it recently. The Stars have beat the Jets three times this year. And let's be honest, guys. Regular season records don't mean anything once you get into the playoffs. Once you get into a seven-game, best-of-seven playoff series, they take on a life of their own.
Yes.
But I do think it's significant that you can bring up a guy like Logan Stankoven from the AHL, and, you know, he immediately produces. And I was a little bit surprised that the Stars didn't make any moves, but you can make an argument, why would they, when they acquired the top rental on the market in Chris Tanev, right? So Chris Tanev was a great acquisition to an already excellent group of defensemen. I mean, we know about Miro Heiskanen and Esa Lindell, Ryan Suter. Thomas Harley's having his breakout year. Yeah. Hakanpaa is a 6'7" beast on the back end for the Dallas Stars. So their defense is excellent. We talked about the goaltending with Murat. I mean, if the Jets have the best 1-2 goaltending combo, I'm putting Dallas number two, Dave. Scott Wedgwood is a very capable backup, and Jake Oettinger is a top five goalie in the league. Look at goals saved above expected.
I agree with you. He hasn't been great this year. It is worth pointing out his save percentage is only .900 this year, and it's a 2.95 goals against average. I do agree with you, though.
Are you talking about Wedgwood?
I'm talking about Oettinger. That's Oettinger's save percentage, and Wedgwood's is even worse. Oettinger's at .900, and Wedgwood's at .899. So Dallas is seeding without getting great goaltending.
How bad could it be? Like, it's their third overall in the league, right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think Dallas, even though their goaltending numbers aren't great, they're still, you know, a very good hockey team. And I don't think that Oettinger's numbers, you know, are going to be that low. And I think eventually he's going to round into form. He has had some injury difficulties this season. So, you know, if Hellebuck is the best goaltender in the West, and he is in my mind, I would still put, you know, maybe Demko is ahead of Oettinger, but Oettinger is probably pretty close to, you know, is number three, despite not having great numbers this season. And by the way,
don't forget what Oettinger did, by the way, when against the Flames, when
he was incredible
playoff series.
Yeah. And for the record, I don't think that Vancouver is in the same class as the Jets, the Avalanche, or the Stars. I do think that they are a step below when it comes to what will ultimately happen in the Western Conference playoffs. Vancouver's a good hockey team, but I don't think they're quite as good and quite ready to go from non-playoff team to Western Conference finalist or something along those lines.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, you know, when you're talking about the Golden Knights, I mean, not only were they adding for the playoff run, they were adding because they're struggling right now, right? Like, some injuries on the back end. Petrangelo and Shea Theodore are back in the lineup now. But Noah Hanifin seems to be forgotten here. Tomas Hertl is obviously going to make them more dangerous offensively. But part of that is because of Mark Stone's health uncertainty, right? Like, a lot of people make the jokes that, well, as soon as the first game comes around, similar to last year between the Jets and the Golden Knights, you know, he'll just pop up. I don't know about that. I mean, it's a serious injury that he's dealing with. So, I mean, the Golden Knights in the Pacific are obviously, you know, a team that you don't want to take lightly. The Edmonton Oilers, again, I am surprised that they didn't do more. I mean, look, Adam Henrique, I think, improves your forward depth, right? Like, you've already got some of the best forward depth in the NHL. Like, Zach Hyman is having one of the quietest 40-goal seasons, I think, in recent memory. Maybe not so much in Alberta, but, I mean, because you have Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, what Hyman's doing, I think, you know, is really impressive. So I think, you know, they bring in Henrique, but, you know, the goaltending, again, speaking of Colorado's goaltending or Dallas's goaltending, you know, how much do you trust Stuart Skinner to take your team on a long playoff run? I just don't know. I think Skinner's one of those guys that he has good stretches and then he has not so good stretches, right?
Edmonton's the same team they were last year. The same team that, you know,
is just as good, if not better, than every other team in the league. And, you know, that's going to factor in. Like, Edmonton, yes, they can score 4 or 5 goals a game, Drew, and they can teams 4-3, 5-4, 6-4, whatever. But when you're running into some stingier defensive teams, like the Vegas Golden Knights, for example, you can't necessarily do that.
Look, I think that's why I think that the best teams are in the Central Division. You look at the Pacific Division.
Absolutely. Teams, yeah, I agree with that.
The Pacific Division teams, to me, have, you know, flaws. They have holes where I don't think that the Jets, the Stars, and the Avalanche have holes as significant as those in the Pacific. And Vegas, to me, is just such a wild card because you don't yet know what the Vegas team is going to look like come playoff time. Acquiring Tomas Hertl, you know, if everybody else is fully healthy, you know, makes them that much more difficult. But that's a big if. Mm-hmm. And to Ezzie's point, you know, this isn't Mark Stone who's out with a knee sprain or something where, you know, they can, you know, delay the knee sprain coming back until he's 100% healthy. He's out with an internal organ injury.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's scary. What it is.
Yeah.
It's a scary internal organ injury. And even if he comes back for game one of the playoffs, I have trouble believing that he's going to be at full health. And he's going to be the same Mark Stone as he would be if he was fully healthy. And, oh, also, by the way, Vegas might have to expend so much energy just to maintain their spot in the playoffs and to maintain their position. That's a factor. You see teams eventually wear out if they're battling, you know,
that can also be a benefit, though, Drew, right? Like, Florida was an 8 seed last year. I mean, like just because you're an 8 seed doesn't mean you can't go on a playoff run, but
no, but when you are an upper echelon team and have the pedigree of an upper echelon team, Dave, and you maybe have struggles during the regular season, and I look back to Colorado last year where everyone expected Colorado just to turn it on come playoff time because they really were. You know, they were not great during the regular season. They were a playoff team, but they weren't great. And everyone expects you just to snap and turn it on. Well, it's not as easy as doing that. Remember Colorado, they lost in the first round to Seattle last year. It was an upset. Nobody expected it. But, you know, you can't necessarily just do it as easily as pundits and the public would have you believe that you can.
Well, how many teams repeat, right, Dave? Go ahead. I mean, but how many teams repeat? It doesn't happen as often as people think.
No, and again, there's... especially this year, there's just so much parity in the sense that all these teams loaded up and everybody's is good. And so, you know, getting back to your original question, or I mean, if you want, I can talk about the Golden Knights, but I think you've done a good job of it.
Go on.
And I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I know that folks are like, oh, they're going to have all these guys back, but you know, we don't know. I mean, if they do for the third year in a row, have this miraculous thing. I mean, as Joe from Winnipeg, I think, or KWB, I wasn't sure which one was making the point. They're within the framework of the rules. And if 31 other GMs don't like the rules, then they can change them. You don't have to like them. But again, they're the rules of the CBA. They're following. They're not going outside the CBA and making rules that don't apply. And if the NHL doesn't feel like they're above board, they can send their doctors to verify that, you know, the information is accurate. But I mean, I look at Dallas and I look at the moves they've made, and really, similar to Winnipeg, they've augmented their roster. They haven't really made big substantive changes like the Colorado Avalanche have done. So to me, the Avs are an amazing team, and you don't want to bet against Nathan MacKinnon at any time, right, Ezzy? But ultimately, when you look at Dallas, you know, remember, we saw a Dallas team that didn't have Tanev in the lineup, was missing Sagan, and, you know, they defeated the Jets. So I think Dallas to me right now is that top team probably right now in the Western Conference. And then I'd say the Jets are probably right below them. And I always think Connor Hellebuck is the great equalizer in any sort of debate you're having, because I think he'll bring, you know, we know why Connor Hellebuck signed. You know, we had Chuck Hellebuck on. We know what his goal is. And I think, this is going to energize all the players. And we heard, you know, Weber wrote a story about what Kyle Connor had to say about the acquisitions the Winnipeg Jets made. We know that he had something from Brendan Dillon the day before. We know that the Jets not standing pat and just saying, well, look, we got a number one team or top team in the Central Division. We don't really need to make rosters. And, you know, I was joking saying Kevin Cheveldayoff will use his internal ads, you know, the Kyle Capobiancos and the Ville Heinolas. Well, the fact of the matter is, it's, you know, the moves he made yesterday, obviously the Sean Monahan acquisition 5 weeks ago, I think of all the players that's going to galvanize, it's going to galvanize someone like Connor Hellebuyck. And I think he'll be even more, you know, ready to go for game one of the playoffs, knowing that this group is the best Jets group. And I documented it yesterday, right? Like 10 games ahead of last year's team, 4 or 5 wins ahead of the 17-18 team. But in terms of depth, this team is the best team, I think, since 17-18. So I know Connor Hellebuyck, knowing that how hard it's been to get back to the mountain of you know, being one of the best teams and going as far as the Jets have done, I think he's going to take this. And I think you're going to see a really determined, we always see a determined Connor Hellebuyck. I think even more so in this playoffs, knowing what this group has built and knowing how fleeting it can be, I think you're going to see a really substantial performance from him.
And you've got the comment up there from James Robinson, right? Like the first round in the Western Conference playoffs could be the Stanley Cup Finals. And the reality is, Dave, nobody likes to say this, but I always keep this in the back of my mind when we're talking about, you know, who's the favorite in the West or who's the best team and everything like that. And I really do agree. I think if you put Dallas up against the Jets, I mean, it's really like, you know, who do you prefer? Like, pick your poison. Both of these teams are excellent teams. But at the end of the day, the regular season means absolutely nothing once you start the playoffs. It really does.
It's a shame, by the way, that that's the case.
Well, it is. And I mean, that goes to, you know, the playoff format. And, you know, will they ever change that? I have no idea. Probably not. But the reality is, once the playoffs start, these series are each their own animal. And you see things happen that you didn't expect to happen. Like, nobody saw Columbus sweeping the Tampa Bay Lightning. I did not see one person predicting that. Maybe somebody picked the Blue Jackets, guys. Nobody picked a Blue Jackets sweep. What was that, 2018 or 2019? I think it was 2019, if I'm not mistaken. But that was the year the Lightning had that great regular season, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing last year. Boston has a great regular season. Who do they meet in the first round? The Florida Panthers in the first round. Look, I'm not going to get ahead of myself here, but I wouldn't want to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round.
I don't know. I think that the Lightning just seem like they're on fumes at this point in time, even if they do make the playoffs, which is still a bit of an
well, they're still
there.
A good team, Drew.
Well, like, of course they're a good team.
None of us know you. I mean, we could sit here all day long and you could say, I think the Lightning are going to be out in the first round. You have no idea. I have no idea.
Nobody.
So, I mean, you can't say with confidence that the Lightning are going to be out in the first round. Any team that makes the playoffs has a chance.
Right. And that's why I think that's the sort of the shame of the NHL. Look, the playoffs are great. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that the regular season should have more meaning than it does. You go through this grind for 82 games to finish top in your conference or top in your division. And your reward really isn't as significant as it should be. And I know that a lot of people disagree with me, and that's fine. And I've come to grips with people disagreeing with me for the vast majority of my life. But I do think that if you are the best team through 82 games, you should get something better than one extra home game and theoretically a softer opponent in the first round. And I say theoretically because oftentimes there isn't a huge gap between those teams. Now, this year there might be, because I don't believe that, you know, whoever finishes in that, say, that second wild card spot is truly that dangerous of a team. But, you know, if it is the Vegas Golden Knights and all of a sudden they're healthy with Mark Stone and healthy with Thomas Hertl, well, congratulations. There's a hell of a reward for doing so well for 82 games. We digress, you know, and that's a different issue that the NHL, you know, refuses to deal with, and that's fine. That's out of our control. There's no reason to rehash things of that nature. But you look at I just continue to look at that Central Division. I continue to look at that and say, look, they're so close. And a week ago, I wouldn't have said the same thing. A week ago, I would have said Dallas is a step above the Jets and the Avalanche. But that's why the moves that the Jets made,
I think they still were. I don't think anything's changed that, Drew. I think now it's just a little bit closer. I mean, look at the race all year long. It's been close all year long.
Right. But if the Jets came out and just, you know, tinkered around the edges yesterday, for example, let's say.
Oh, they're closer for sure. I agree with that. The gap between, if you want to call it a gap between the Jets and the Stars, acquiring Toffoli, Colin Miller, Sean Monahan, that gap is closed. And then you throw in Chris Tanev. I agree with you, but I guess, you know, it's a difference of opinion, because I think all year long, I've considered the Jets, Stars, and Avalanche in a class of their own in the Central. Like, I've always almost considered those teams interchangeable in how dangerous they are. Like, I could honestly see, I could hear your argument, Drew, for any one of those teams winning the Stanley Cup this year.
No question about it. I agree with that. I think any of those three teams could very well win the Stanley Cup. But prior to yesterday, I don't think the Jets could have won the Stanley Cup. I just don't. I think they were a step behind what Dallas, especially after Dallas went and got Tanev. Now, you know, in an ideal situation for the Winnipeg Jets, and truly it is well within their reach, as we've talked about on some of the post-game shows, is that the Jets finish atop the Central Division. The Stars and Avalanche, you know, battle each other in the first round. One of those two teams gets eliminated. The Jets get whoever they get, you know, as a wild card team. That's an advantage. That is a leg up. That is something where you get sort of you need one softer matchup in come playoff time to advance as far as you can. Remember when the Jets went in 17-18, they had that first round matchup against Minnesota that they won in five games. That was their softer matchup before they went.
Man, that was fun inside Canada Life.
Of course,
that was a fun series.
Yes, it was.
Sorry, I just remember how much fun that was. And, you know, everyone remembers Bruce Boudreau, what he said on the bench.
Right, the slamming his hand and everything else. But the Jets were significantly better than the Minnesota Wild in that playoff series. You need a playoff series where you are ahead above your opponent to, I think, go on a long run.
And like you said, Drew, they only get that if they finish first and play Nashville. You're not going to get that if you play Dallas or Colorado in the first round.
Right.
And you're certainly not going to get that if you play Vegas in the first round, Dave. I guess it could be another team, but right now it looks like it's going to be Nashville or Vegas.
I think it's going to be LA. I think LA drops, LA. Dave.
Or LA,
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an easy series, but I think the Jets win that series probably in five or six.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Nashville's actually a harder one because of Saros and because of how well they're playing. I mean, they augmented their roster yesterday. You know, a lot of folks, remember, we were talking, is Nashville going to be a buyer or a seller? Well, you know, I think, last I checked, I think they were undefeated in their last
9-0 in their last 10. Oh, so they haven't had a regulation loss in their last 10 games.
Yeah, so they won 8 straight, then they lost in OT, and then they won again. So, I mean, this is a team that is firing, and they're hot. So, now, again, do I think Nashville's a little bit ahead of schedule? Well, look what they did in last year, right? In that run, Winnipeg had to, you know, get a little bit nervous with Nashville. So I'm just saying it's just an interesting thought argument. But I mean, I think ultimately what we've concluded after this segment, boys, is that there is not an easy out, relatively speaking. There's a slightly easier, matchup. But I don't think any of these are going to be easy. And that's what I think is going to make it so fascinating, which is why I think this first round is going to be amazing. And I think those post-game shows are going to be off the hizzo.
And that's why you have to be subscribing to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel if you aren't already doing so. Smash the subscribe button. Smash the like button. We do this on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. And we do this after each and every Jets game, which means we're going to do it later on tonight, right around 11:40 p.m. Central Time, after the Jets and the Vancouver Canucks, two of the top teams in the Western Conference, do battle on the left coast of Canada. The last game between the Jets and the Canucks was a hell of a doozy. We'll see what tonight brings, but I think we would all be surprised if it is anything different. One of the most unexpected insiders during yesterday's trade deadline proceedings was the People's Insider, former NHLer Jordan Schmaltz. He was breaking trades left, right, and center. Jordan joins us next. The People's Insider, Jordan Schmaltz, up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Don't go anywhere. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. We're talking about the Jets. We're talking about the trade deadline. Later tonight, we'll be talking about the Jets and the Vancouver Canucks, the Illegal Curve postgame show, in about, 13 hours time. 13 hours plus a few extra minutes is when we'll talk about that game. That'll happen later tonight. We're thrilled to welcome to the program the People's Insider, Jordan Schmaltz, joins us on the line now. Jordan, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are things?
What's up, fellas? How are we doing? Where are we at right now? Are we in Winnipeg, the Vegas Winnipeg of the North, as I call it? Nice.
Yeah. Exactly. Beautiful. Peg Vegas is what we like to refer to it as here among the locals.
Yeah, no, it's I spent some time in Grand Forks, North Dakota, so that's where I played school at University of North Dakota. So we would always go up to Las Vegas, as we called it at the time. Especially, you know, it's 21 to drink in the States, and it's only 18 in the good people of Manitoba always take care of you. So we had a lot of guys from Toba, and we'd always go up there, and even like Brandon, we did a couple stops up there. So I like Winnipeg. I always have. It's near and dear to my heart.
So there, Jordan, were you at Whiskey Dicks, or were you at Tijuana Yacht Club? Where did you hit up Palomino Club?
Yeah, we used to go to the Pal back in the day. We would go to Whiskey Dicks, sit on the patio there. We'd also, like, a little bit later, too, the Pint used to be a good spot. I think it's the local now.
Yeah.
But we would always start at Earl's on Main. Like, that was tradition. You go there, you get the – what's the drink there? The Bellini, right?
Bellini. Yeah. Bellini
in about 9 to 10 Kokanees. Then go over to the Shark Club, hit the Felt, get your touch on the old card table, and then go over to Whiskey Dicks or wherever you're going to make your way. But one of my favorite bars, I don't know if you boys have ever been, it's closed now. It was back in the day, it was Houston's in Brandon. Man, that place used to bump. You go there, and then you go to McDonald's after. It was the parlay like you couldn't read about. So it's had a lot of good times there. A couple buddies from like in and around the Verdun area, so the couple cowboys. So
right on.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I know Toba pretty well.
We appreciate that love. We appreciate that the geography lesson through the previous bars here of Winnipeg.
Well, Dave had
a plaque on a table at Earl's on Main, yeah. Just for the record there, Jordan. So, you know, okay. You are among Earl's royalty when it comes to Dave M over there in the top right.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jordan brought you on to talk about yesterday's trade deadline. You were dropping some, call them schmaltz bombs, I guess, all over Twitter as you were breaking some trades left, right, and center. Given that we're in Winnipeg, let's start with what the Jets did from your perspective. They get Tyler Toffoli. They get Colin Miller, both of whom they get from the New Jersey Devils. What did you think of the Jets' acquisitions at yesterday's trade deadline?
I mean, I think just starting off with the top and the obvious with Tyler Toffoli, as I like to call him, Tyler Tuck Foley, all the guy does is score. I think that's a really good right shot winger, goes into your top six. I think they were, you know, looking at him even like last year in and around the deadline. So I just think he's a really good player. I believe it's his fourth Canadian team he's going to play on. Seems like he's always a deadline acquisition. A really good player that just he can play with guys that with pace. He can also play a cycle game. He's good on the power play. So I really like that acquisition in terms of Toffoli. I think he's a big time player. He's won a Stanley Cup with LA and really good in the room. So I like that. And then Colin Miller, I think, you know, aside from having an absolute piss missile of a shot, I think he's a guy that can go back there, play a 5-6 role. He's pretty good. He's a veteran of 500 odd games and, you know, slot behind a guy like Dylan DeMello. So I just think, you know, they definitely got better. But if you're really looking at the key acquisition is Tyler Toffoli, because he was floating all out there in terms of teams trying to acquire him.
Jordan, I want to ask you about Tarasenko. You played with him with the St. Louis Blues, and I kind of saw that acquisition as kind of flying under the radar. Like the Florida Panthers, I think you'd agree, they're already a Stanley Cup contender. I mean, they showed us what they can do in last year's playoff run, and then you add in Tarasenko, and I realize some people criticize his defensive play, but like the way I look at it, who cares? The guy scores goals. Like, what did you think about that acquisition and what was it like to play with him?
Yeah. So he had a full no movement clause, and the only place he wanted to go was Florida because he has a house there. And Billy Zito and Brett Peterson, the GM there, who's actually my old agent, the assistant GM, good dude. But I just think those guys, they're chess players down there in Florida. I think Tarasenko, yes, he's had a decent amount of surgeries in terms of some shoulders and different things like that. But I think he can still score. I think he can go in the top six or top nine there, and he can be a part of that secondary scoring. I mean, he's a guy that scored 40-odd goals in the league probably 3 or 4 times. But, yeah, I mean, back in those days when I, you know, got my cup of joe with him, he was an elite sniper. That was before, you know, those major surgeries he had on his labrums. But he still can score, and I just think, you know, even just playing with him, like I always tell this story, but he used to like line up like 20 sticks, like right across in the stick room, and he would just look at them, and if they weren't like up to his measure, he would just like look at it and just be like, no good. Look at the like, this fucking thing sucks. And then he would just saw those in half. So probably out of like 10 sticks today, he would probably keep 3 or 4 of those, and the rest would just go right to the garbage. So the guy was just, he was an elite sniper. He was dialed in with his stick. So I just think, to answer your question, he's a sneaky pickup, and I think he still has some juice to give, and he'll be hungry. The sunshine will kind of revive him. He's out of Ottawa. He's playing with a good team. So I think that's a good pickup for Florida.
Jordan, what do you remember from this time? I mean, obviously you're having a lot of fun on Twitter being, you know, the breaker of news yesterday, and you know, but from your time in the game, what was trade deadline like for you? Just being, you know, a player with that uncertainty, because I think it gets lost on people, you know, the human element of how significant this is and the potential to move to another city for, I mean, when you're a young guy, it's not as big a deal as when you're a family man.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I always, you'd always just feel like, you know, just the anxiety or people be a little bit anxious or on their toes or kind of wondering what's going on. Guys checking their phones probably a little bit more than usual. And I mean, I was a part of a I call it like a pigeon trade, like a throw-in trade 1 year from leaving the Marlies in the AHL at the time to go to Bridgeport. I was under contract with the Maple Leafs and they sent me to Bridgeport. And even so, like, I was like, fuck, you know, I got to pack up my apartment. I'm going there for, you know, a month to Bridgeport. This team's not in the playoffs. It's so I just feel for guys. And I think, you know, if you're going to a contender, it's very exciting. But at the same time, I think that week leading up to trade deadline, there's just always talk. Guys are constantly on their phones or talking to their agents, trying to see or figure out, you know, what's going to happen. Even guys like down here in Arizona, like Dumba or Zucker, who have probably been on the block for more or less 6 weeks, they're just thinking like, when is this going to happen? Where am I going to go? So there's just a lot of just, you know, it just creates a lot of distractions in the room. And, you know, once you're finally through that, and especially even playoff teams, you're like, okay, this is the roster we're set with. This is what we're going into battle with for, you know, April. And let's get this thing going.
Jordan Schmaltz, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. You know Jordan, of course, for his time as a member of the St. Louis Blues. He's also the host of Live in Five, a lifestyle and hockey podcast presented by Butter Golf. So that's why you're wearing a hat that says Butter on it.
That's why I am. Yes, I am. Yep.
Okay, there you go. Wanted to give a plug to the hat.
Honestly, I was going to ask, Jordan about that later, but I was looking at some. I haven't ordered. I plan on ordering some stuff on the website because some of that stuff is awesome. Like all of it is awesome. Quite frankly, I love that Forks hat and all the t-shirts and everything like that. I was going to ask you, might as well do it now. How did that come about and how's it going? Cause I know you post a lot on social media and I follow Butter Golf. So how did that all start?
Yeah, I think it was like 2 years in the works, kind of in and around COVID. And then I had just officially launched it last year before I went over to Switzerland. I was playing just outside of Zurich. So I just was doing kind of just one-off things in terms of, you know, tailored around the waste management or Christmas time. I've done some, you know, collaborations with buddies like my buddy Binnington in St. Louis, the goalie there. And yeah, and just kind of doing like one-off things, releasing some hats. I actually had my mom, who's got a full-time job as a radiologist, packaging stuff up stateside while I was in Switzerland. So I was like, hey, Lisa, I need you getting order 152 out. You know what I mean? She's like, oh, well, I'm working right now. So it was pretty funny. I was making her, you know, as one of my slave employees, I guess you say, because I wasn't paying her anything, but you know, good on her. She's a great woman. So she was helping me out with that. And then, I just think it's something I've always wanted to do, get into the apparel, the lifestyle stuff. And now that I'm kind of done playing and really trying to ramp things up, it's been good. It's as you guys know, it's a startup and different things like that. You have your own challenges, but I have a lot of fun with it. We've had a decent amount of guys in the league rocking it. So it's been fun little project here. And, you know, we're about 18 months into this thing. So, yeah,
I'm looking at that breakfast ball t-shirt right now with a stack of pancakes with the golf ball. And I will definitely be buying one of those just to give you a heads up. If you see an order come in from Ginsburg, that's me.
Well, perfect. Tell Lisa. Lisa's the one sending them out.
We got Madison HQ and we got Scottsdale HQ. So most of the stuff will come out of Scottsdale.
Well,
but
Drew was just in Scottsdale. So maybe he can pick one up in person.
I spent some time down there as well. It's a nice place to spend the winter. That's for sure.
It's great. Yep.
Yeah. Jordan Schmaltz, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Jordan, you look at the moves that were made, and there were a lot of moves made. I want to talk about Colorado for a second, because Colorado, we know you just expect them to be contenders for the Stanley Cup year in and year out. How much of a transition is it when you're a team that brings in so many new guys at the deadline, like the Avalanche did? Is there a sort of a learning curve and an acclimatization period for all those guys to really feel comfortable in and really vibe in that room, given the number of new bodies that are going to be members of the Avalanche moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look at just when the Blues won the Cup in 2018-19, we were in last place until about right around December 1st, Craig Berube comes in. I mean, they had all the new pieces with even Braden Shen only being there for one or two years. You bring in a guy like O'Reilly. So it just takes a while to gel and kind of get that chemistry. And if you look at the Avalanche, they shipped a guy out like Ryan Johansson. I don't think he was really vibing or fitting their team's culture. So they sent him packing to Philly. He's obviously going to be in Lehigh now. I believe they put him on waivers. But I just think in terms of when you get a lot of new pieces, like you said, you're trying to put this chessboard together. You're thinking who can play where, what guys can really, you know, find success with each other. And you bring in like Miles Wood, Ross Colton. You have guys in now in there and Casey Mittelstadt and a couple of other bodies as well. It's just, it takes time. I like their team. I just don't know that two center position, I think, is still a little bit of a hole. Yes, it is an upgrade with Casey Mittelstadt. I don't know if they can compete with a Vegas Golden Knights team that has, you know, especially if they get healthy and, you know, those big boys in Vegas. That's that Kelly McCrimmon from Plenty, Saskatchewan. Just what a gunslinger that guy is. I couldn't get over those moves he was making.
No, it's incredible. And obviously, you know, we know him really well because he was the longtime owner, GM of the Brandon Wheat Kings. And the Wheat Kings, as you know, I mean, they've always been a great WHL team. So I agree with you. I think, and the fact that Bob McKenzie did the microphone drop announcing that trade yesterday, I think was just kind of added an extra element to that acquisition. But yeah, Noah Hanifin, obviously a great defenseman. I wanted to ask you about, and Drew and I were kind of having a little bit of an argument, and that's okay. We do that quite often here on a Legal Curve, but Matt Dumba was one of the trades that the People's Champ broke yesterday. And I don't know about if I'm the only person here, but I mean, if I'm the Florida Panthers, I think the Panthers definitely have a team to go all the way, but I wouldn't want to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. And then they bring in Matt Dumba, and I think they brought in someone else. I'm forgetting here.
Yeah, Anthony Duclair.
Anthony Duclair. There you go. Like Duclair, yeah. I mean, a former, you know, 30-goal guy. I mean, I think that those acquisitions of Dumba and Duclair were very sneaky good for Julien Brisebois.
Yeah, I just think like you look at the West and how much they loaded up, and it's going to be big boy hockey. And you got some teams in the East, I think, that are going to be able to compete against each other as well, and even throw in Carolina in the mix with Jake Guentzel. But yeah, I mean, I like the Dumba acquisition. I think in terms of just watching him down here being boots on the ground boys at the iconic Mullet Arena that seats about 4,500 people. I just think his game is, you know, I don't know if it's at a level where it used to be in terms of his offensive production, because, you know, he doesn't play on the power play anymore, this and that. But I just think if he can slot in there for a depth add, a 5-6 position, play 15 odd minutes a night, I think he'll help that team. He brings a lot of physicality, plays hard, especially around the net, which is huge in playoff time. You got to be a prick right in front of that net. So he does that. And then Anthony Duclair, I think he can kind of revitalize his year in terms of getting out of Man Jose and getting down to South Florida, where he's familiar with that weather. He scored 30 goals there. The flip-flops are back on, boys. He's feeling good. So, yeah, that team, I think, you know, anytime you have Nikita Kucherov, Stamkos, Braden Point, those guys are dangerous. It's going to come down to, you know, a bounce here or there. And in a seven-game series, those things always just turn into a war.
Jordan, I'm just curious about your own journey. You know, like you said, you played in the NHL, you played at the AHL level. How difficult was it to go overseas? I think you went to Finland first, and then yep. I think you ended in Switzerland. So from your perspective, that journey, how was it, and what was it like leaving North America and getting, I guess, the opportunity to go overseas and live in Finland and live in Switzerland?
Yeah, it was good. I think, like, you know, just in terms of my own like journey or path, I, you know, came out of school of North Dakota, was a high pick, was 25th overall. And then I turned pro, and that St. Louis team was so deep at the time. They had a lot of good defensemen, and I thought probably I was just going to step in and play like every kid. But they had guys like Petrangelo, Shattenkirk, Bortuzzo, and then I came in the same year as Parayko, who is Ivan Drogba. This guy is an absolute machine. So it's like, you know, I'm not going to be replacing him. So I think that kind of humbled me a little bit. It took me a while to kind of find my footing. And then once I got up to the league and made the team out of camp a couple of years, I just think, like, whether it was opportunity or not seizing the opportunity, not playing a role that I was really, you know, in particular familiar with. I was a power play guy kind of coming in playing as a 5-6 PKer, you know, not a role that I really adjusted well to. And then you kind of just get thrown through the ringer a little bit in terms of bouncing around, getting traded. The 1 year after the cup with St. Louis where they won it, I got traded to Toronto, and Kyle Dubas actually was, you know, had a good meeting with him. He's like, hey, we're going to give you a great chance to compete for a 5-6-7 position. ultimately Babs didn't end up going with me, so I got sent down to the AHL, and then COVID, this and that, and then ended up in Europe. Helsinki was awesome. I loved it. It was a great spot. Honestly, I kind of wish I would have played another year there. And then last year we kind of ended with a little bit of a concussion, had an injury, kind of knocked me out for 6 odd months. I came back, tried to play, was feeling like shit, came back. It was just every time I was coming back, I was getting those same symptoms. So I came back to the States and rehabbed that. You know, I'm feeling good now, but no, I just think in terms of, you know, everyone's run kind of ends and you got to find the next little thing. And, you know, I'm trying to find that now with my media stuff and, you know, Hockey Night in Scottsdale, Live and Five, have the Butter Golf Company. So yeah, no, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to play and met some pretty cool dudes along the way. And I guess looking back on it, especially as my time is probably a pro, I was probably better in the locker room than I was on the ice. But hey, I'll take that, boys. I like snapping around with the fellas.
Jordan Schmaltz, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jordan, now that the trade deadline has passed, these teams are more or less set moving forward to the playoffs. You know, do you have a team in particular that you think is maybe a step above the others? I mean, we were talking about it for the last, you know, almost 2 hours here this morning, that it seems like the West, you know, in particular, there's not a huge gap between the Jets, the Avalanche, and the Dallas Stars. So from your perspective, sort of outside of the bubble here in Winnipeg, do you have a team that you sort of say, yeah, that team is the one that I think is maybe a step above the others?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to remember, like, last year, like, it just seemed like the West, like, you know, it was inevitable. It was either going to be Vegas or Edmonton, and honestly, probably Vegas, just with how much deeper they were, and they just had more pieces to the puzzle. But now I'm looking at the West, and I'm like, Jesus, this is, like, high-flying. It's, you know, there's so many good teams. Everybody's loading up. It's stacked, you know. There's probably five-odd teams that could win and come out of the Western Conference. I don't know. I mean, if Vegas is healthy, and I keep going back to these guys, but I mean, if Hurdle's healthy, even if they can get Stone back, you have Noah Hanifin. I mean, if you're looking at Vegas, you're looking at their decor. I always look at what wins in the playoffs, and it's always big, rangy D that can skate, and they can clear the net and make a first pass. So if you're looking at Vegas, you have Alex Pietrangelo, Shea Theodore, Braden McNabb, Noah Hanifin, Zach Whitecloud, and then you have this Nick Hague. Just that decor and just how, I mean, they're gonna have to scratch like a legitimate top five defense, maybe even a top four defenseman normally. Like, they're, that decor is so, and I'm forgetting Alec Martinez too. Like, that guy is still silky back there. I mean, his middle pop all day in the D zone, like he can find the middle like no other. So it's just like that decor is so good. And if those guys are healthy, it's gonna be tough to beat them. And Aiden Hill, he's able to manage the game. He's a good goaltender back there. So if I'm just looking at decors, I'm looking at Vegas. That's a really good decor. But then again, I mean, Winnipeg's been really good all year. Their top six is arguably the best in the league, if not one of the two, just with, in terms of their body work. And I don't know, Edmonton, you can never count out Mick Jesus and Leon Draisaitl, some of those guys. If Stuart Leonard Skinner can make a good first save and, you know, the big boys back there can clear the net, they got a chance. Colorado, obviously, with Nate MacKinnon, came out in that interview the other day on TNT with Biz. He says he doesn't eat ice cream, so you know he's going to be dialed in. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of good teams there. There's a lot of good, you know, a lot of good pieces they added, and it's going to be interesting because I think the West is ultimately going to win the Cup, but I just think those guys are going to beat up on each other so much. Like, if Florida can get out of the East, you know, maybe in the first round in 5 or 6 games, and then, you know, the next round 5 or 6 games, because it's all about like saving and conserving those, that energy. As you know, like last year, Jack Eichel came out after the Cup win, when they won in 5 games, he's like, I feel like I could play another round, which is crazy to say, but they kind of came out of the West a little bit unscathed or untouched, and kind of did that to Florida, where they were a little bit more banged up and going deeper into series where they're playing 7 games, 6 games, 7 games. So, and having to come from behind in those series. So I just think it's going to be interesting. If you put a gun to my chin, I'm going the Vegas Golden Knights, Kelly McCrimmon. That's who I'm going with.
Yeah, and it's tough to bet against that because they're the defending champions, and they just added Hanifin, Hurdle, and who am I forgetting here? They added Anthony Mantha. It's like you forget. It seems like Mantha was acquired like a year ago.
It does.
That just happened a week ago.
That's crazy.
And Jordan, I wanted to ask you about your brother because you mentioned Arizona earlier. Obviously, the Arizona Coyotes most likely aren't going to make the playoffs this year. Your brother's having a great year. I believe he's second on the team in scoring. And I don't know. I was kind of thinking about this, and it's like, is it even safe to say that your brother's kind of becoming like Shane Doan 2.0? Like, he's becoming the the staple of the Coyotes there. He's been there for many years now. And this is also something that I kind of debated telling you about, but there's a thing called the Rady JCC dinner here in Winnipeg. It's a huge dinner supporting the Rady Jewish Community Center. And they have one of the best, if not the best, sports auctions for memorabilia.
Okay.
And I think you know where I'm going with this here. I was looking around and I'm like, okay, you know, I got a couple kids. I'm not a big wheeler and dealer like Drew. So I only have a few bucks to throw on a jersey. I see a Nick Schmaltz signed Coyotes jersey, put $250 on it. So I've got that hanging at my house. So,
oh, nice.
You know, a good shout out to to your brother and and the Schmaltz family. And the question is, like, you know, what has it been like? You know, obviously, you know, you go to some games there. And for Nick Schmaltz, obviously, you know, even though the team isn't going to make the playoffs, it seems like the team is heading in the right direction with young players like, you know, Logan Cooley, Dylan Gunther, others.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, there's a lot looming in terms of just the outside distractions. Is this team going to stay here? Are we going to get the land? Are we going to get the arena? Now, if the arena gets wheels in motion and they start digging that goddamn hole, this is a great spot to play. If it's in North Scottsdale, like they're saying, it's just, we need to see some of that, you know, come to fruition. And in terms of the team, I think everything follows from that. In terms of you get the arena, you get this spot to play, because it is a good spot to play. It just, in terms of Mullet Arena being a long-term fix, no, that's not realistic. So if you get that, then that you get that arena, you get the new practice facility. Now, that'll ultimately attract free agents to want to come down here and sign, because it's a great spot to live. As you guys know, you've been down here, and especially during the hockey season, it's tough to beat. But right now, it's tough to get free agents. They're not really willing to spend, you know, X amount of dollars. It's pretty much just long-term IR money, getting them to the floor and different things like that. I think they have a lot of good prospects. They have some good pieces in terms of Nick, like you mentioned, my brother, as well as Clayton Keller. It's just, I think, you know, I don't know how long the quote-unquote rebuild is going to take, and there's still the different things looming, like could they be in Utah next year, this and that. So I, you know, as being a local, I really hope they make it work. They're able to stay, and selfishly, you know, having Nick 20 minutes away just south of me where I'm at is great, because we can hang out and, you know, talk shop and different things like that. Even after the game last night, go for dinner and kind of hang out before he hits the road here. But yeah, I just think, like, in terms of Nick's game, I think he's a, you know, I might be biased, I probably am, but I think he's a really underrated player. I think he is an
absolutely elite. A lot of Jets fans wanted Chevy to acquire your brother, by the way. We should throw that out there. A lot of, I mean, I'm sure your brother's happy to stay in Arizona, but he was one of those guys that, you know, Jets fans were like, yes, let's bring Schmaltz over to the Jets.
Yeah, no, I think he's a very, just because you don't get the market's small down here in terms of, you know, you don't get the national attention, but I just think, you know, watching him a lot of games, especially this year, I think he's taking his game to another level. I think he's playing with a little bit more bite, a little bit more of an edge, which is funny to see, because normally he was kind of just the guy floating out there, and especially even coming up just, you know, as a kid, just kind of, you know, he's always like had a good stick and different things like that. But I think he's adding layers to his game in terms of, you know, playing a heavier game. He's getting, you know, in the corners more. He's, you know, he's just on guys more. He's on top of pucks. So it's cool to see his game evolve. And I think, you know, he's even becoming a leader on this team as an assistant captain. And it's cool to see, man. I think he's, for a kid that, you know, would basically kind of, he's getting out of his shell is what I'm trying to say. And it's cool to see. And he's playing well this year. The team's just, as you boys know, it's a little bit of the Nordstrom Rack over here, you know?
Jordan Schmaltz, the People's Insider. Thanks, Jordan, for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Best of luck with Butter Golf, and we'll do it again real soon, buddy.
Awesome, boys. Thanks for having me. And it's Saturday, right? You can't drink all day unless you start in the morning. So Godspeed out there, men. Thanks for having me. And we'll do it again, baby.
There you go. Thanks, Jordan. Thanks, Take care. Yeah, Jordan Schmaltz joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. First time appearance, great guest. He was dropping.
And half of your wardrobe is from Nordstrom Rack, Drew.
The Nordstrom Rack is the discount version of Nordstrom's. I know. Just for the record. Okay. I just wanted to make sure you know that.
I've been there.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I feel like Dave and I might have gone there in Vegas one year.
We did.
Yeah.
It's nice that you guys go shopping together. That's very cute.
Well, Drew, I can't afford to shop at the high end, you know, shops that you like your $1,000 Italian suits. I can't compete with that.
It's true. You know, I am known for my devilish fashion here on the program, as I wear a different version of a shirt that I got at Clear Lake on each and every show. You know, those are very hard to come by. And
yeah, there's quite the fashion scene in Clear Lake. Dave knows that.
Dave and I have occasionally run into each other as we are
wearing the same shirt, actually. So there's nothing fashion forward about that.
It was very awkward. It's like, oh, well, you're here and I'm here and we're wearing the same clothes.
It's like the Spider-Man meme. You, me.
And then we went our separate ways and to never speak about it again. Great show this morning on this edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of it, Murat was on in the hour number one. He was a tremendous guest. Jordan Schmaltz in hour number two. The instant replay available on our YouTube channel, of course. And Dave M will have the podcast up sometime in the next little bit, as he always does. It's a busy day still to come, though, of course. The Jets and the Vancouver Canucks. So we want to remind you, keep it locked to illegalcurve.com. We're going to have all the latest news before the Jets and the Canucks on the website, as we always do. Are the Moose in action today, Dave?
Yeah, in Iowa.
There you go. The Moose are in Iowa. So Dave M will have coverage of the Moose game as well.
I've driven through Iowa before. I've never spent time in Iowa, but I've definitely driven through there.
And the state of Iowa says, thank you for not spending time there.
I have spent time in Iowa because my buddy was doing his PhD there. So I drove from Michigan to Iowa. And
Des Moines?
Let me tell you. Yeah. And it was a long drive. You know, Illinois looks like such a small state at some points. It kept going. I'm like, when is Illinois going to end? But eventually I got through Illinois, got to Iowa. And it was a fun place to be.
You were a cyclone for a day. Is that right?
No.
Iowa State or Iowa? You're either a Hawkeye or a Cyclone.
Hawkeye.
You're a Hiker.
Drew loves his college nicknames.
We went, what did we go to? What's it called? What do they have at in the summers? State Fair. Yeah. But the Iowa State Fair, there's been a lot of, we're talking about butter golf. The Iowa State
Deep Fair. Deep fried butter?
Everything is butter. In fact, they have a life-size butter cow. It's a cow made of butter in Iowa. So, and then I saw, I think it was Art was saying that he was, had a couple of butter stories. And I have a butter story where a buddy of mine, got his tanning oil confiscated. So this is my buddy, Richard Tapper, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but we have a boys weekend at the lake. We're all out there and he's got sunscreen. He's got the tanning oil on, and the guy whose place it is says, don't do that. You're going to get all over my dock. It's going to ruin the dock. So he throws him in the water. He confiscates the oil. Tap goes back into the cabin and comes back like 20 minutes later. And he's like glistening. And we're like, he just confiscated the oil. How do you have that? He looked at me, he goes, butter.
Like Newman? Like basically butter.
Oh,
like
Kramer.
Buttering himself?
Yeah. Okay. He cooked like a ham. I mean, like a turkey.
Like a turkey? Okay. That's a great story, I got to tell you. That's actually pretty funny.
I'll
give a good chuckle
turkey
to that one. Big thanks to all of you for joining us. You joined us earlier this morning on the Illegal Curve post-game show, which was this morning. It's hard to believe. And you're going to join us later on today on the Illegal Curve post-game show. So clearly a very busy time and a number of broadcasts coming your way. We appreciate your support. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, and leave us feedback here, there, and everywhere regarding this program. And as Frosty Winnipeg has it up on the screen, a big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make the Saturday show, the post-game show, and the website a possibility. That's our friends at Farmery Beer, home of Illegal Curve Lager, Rolly's Transfer, Seagram's, Boston Pizza, Tough Duck, Betway, Zapia Group Realty, Linden Market Dental Center, Grid Park, use code Illegal Curve to park for free, and of course, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Also want to make mention, we are the media sponsor, one of the media sponsors for the upcoming Rady JCC dinner. So get tickets for that fabulous event. As he was talking about it with the interview with Jordan Schmaltz, tickets available, RadyJCC.com. Everybody have a great Saturday. We'll see you back here in about 12 and a half hours time for the post-game show of the Jets and the Canucks. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.